tens of thousands continue to flee Russia, doing what they can to avoid being caught up in Russia's partial mobilization.
It's very scary. I worry about my friends. I'm trying to help my friends to get somewhere else. It's horrible. And I am going to cry now.
Plus, the United Nations Human Rights Office said on Tuesday that Russia's invasion of Ukraine has caused a dire human rights situation.
Following several field visits to settlements in Kyiv and Chernihiv regions, we've corroborated willful killings of civilians by Russian armed forces.
And later in the program, early into this new school year, Ukrainian students face frightening realities. Today is Tuesday, September 27th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. When one Russian learned Moscow was calling up hundreds of thousands of military reservists to fight in Ukraine, he and his family dropped everything at home and jumped in the car. Reuters met several men like him in neighboring Georgia, where authorities estimate that some 40,000 Russians have fled since the war began. Reuters' Matthew LaRotonda is up first.
The protests and the apparent exodus of fighting-age men from Russia following the call-up of hundreds of thousands of military reservists for the war in Ukraine is still going. And in one of the countries where they're fleeing, neighboring Georgia, Reuters met several opposing that order. Some who had just arrived and others already here, including a family, one among 40,000 Russians that Georgian authorities say have come to their capital alone since the invasion began. Dmitry Kirilyunok, a father, Ivan Streltsov, an army reservist, and a man named Maxim, who didn't give his last name.
We're completely against this war, and we call it for what it is. It's not an operation, it's a war. When we found out about the mobilization, we dropped everything at home and jumped in the car. Russia is being fragmented and destroyed by corruption, lawlessness, suspension of all rights and freedoms, and suspension of views.
I took part in protests when the military operation started. For us, as citizen activists, things have become very difficult at this moment in our own motherland. We're all being watched. All of this has pulled us back from growth, from progress, from unity. It's pulled us back, for example, from fighting for ideals like climate change and world hunger. For me, this is a huge tragedy.
It's very scary. I worry about my friends. I'm trying to help my friends to get somewhere else. It's horrible. And I am going to cry now.
The situation here in Georgia for these Russians is somewhat complicated. The wave of new arrivals in Georgia is threatening to reignite anti-Russian feelings here. Pro-Ukraine messages are plastered everywhere in the city. Some graffiti even says, "Russians, go home." Apartment prices have also skyrocketed in the last 6 months. At one point on Sunday, the wait time at the border to enter Georgia hit 48 hours. According to Russian state media, who cited local officials. There are similar scenes playing out in Kazakhstan, Finland, and Mongolia.
Matthew LaRotonda of Reuters News. Moscow said on Tuesday that it was not requesting the extradition of Russians traveling abroad to avoid being called up to fight in Ukraine. The independent Russian rights watchdog OVD.info has reported that as of September 26, Riya police had detained almost 2,400 protesters in anti-mobilization rallies. The Washington Post also reports that Russian authorities have disproportionately targeted ethnic minorities and protesters for conscription. And in the Russian-occupied Ukrainian Crimean Peninsula, the rights group Crimea SOS says that indigenous Crimean Tatars amount to 90% of conscripts. The Russian occupational authorities in Crimea call that fake, and they claimed that conscription is in proportion to the ethnic composition of the peninsula population. And citing sources inside the Federal Security Service, the independent Russian newspaper, Novaya Gazeta Europe, notes that some 261,000 men have left Russia in the days following Putin's mobilization announcement. Heavy fighting between Ukrainian and Russian forces is currently underway in parts of eastern Ukraine as well as the northeast Kharkiv region. And in addition, Ukraine says that it has destroyed Russian-operated Iranian drones in the Odessa region. While that claim has not been independently verified by VOA, we're now joined by Anna Chernikova in Kyiv with this update. Anna, I wanted to ask you about what's going on in the Odessa region because, as I mentioned, there are these unconfirmed reports of Ukrainian military shooting down Iranian-made drones that are being operated by Russia. How is the Ukrainian military making that assertion?
For the past couple of days, Odessa region, the city of Odessa itself actually, is under constant drone attacks. At first, three drones were attacking Odessa and only one was shot by Ukrainian air defense. But then next two attacks, actually, Ukrainian forces managed to destroy all of them. It's difficult to explain why, at least we don't have this explanation from the military, but all the time we hear that there are three drones attacking Odessa, and one of the first drones that was shot down, actually it was shot over the sea and it was brought to the land from the sea, and at that point it was confirmed that this is the Iranian drone that actually Russia purchased from Iran and now is using in the war in Ukraine. So Ukrainian military said today that actually another three drones were destroyed over Odessa region. They were targeting the city of Odessa. These are kamikaze drones, and previous ones actually targeted the city center, and buildings, administrative buildings, were heavily damaged in the city center of Odessa. For the moment, we know that in total, Ukrainian armed forces destroyed four Iranian kamikaze drones during the day of yesterday only. In total, there are more. Ukrainian military said that they are looking for additional effective methods to actually fight this kind of weapons. They did not specify what exactly they are thinking of. But also today, it was confirmed that another three kamikaze Iranian drones were in the Ukrainian sky attacking Mykolaiv region, and they were also destroyed.
You brought up the city of Mykolaiv, which was also on the brunt of some shelling that was also taking place.
Yes, exactly. Actually, the city of Mykolaiv was hit twice during the night today by very heavy shelling from the Smerch rocket launchers. What we know for the moment that there is a number of civilian objects in the city center that were damaged by this attack, including buildings, stores, and water supply network. We know that the city of Mykolaiv is actually in the middle, and on the way for Russian forces to the city of Odessa, and it's constantly under attacks. But again, recently these attacks, we hear more and more about the attacks, and these attacks are more quite bad, actually. What we can say that again, during the night and also during the day, there are shellings that continue, and Ukrainian forces is doing their best to protect the city because it also has very very important strategic place and strategic meaning in this war.
What about the Zaporizhia region? Because IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi once more called for that military free zone around the nuclear reactor. But what's taking place in and around the reactor that you know about, as well as the adjacent city Enerhodar?
So we know that the workers of the staff of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant do not want to cooperate with Russian forces, and they're trying to escape the city of Enerhodar if they can. And also we hear that the city of Enerhodar is closed for getting out. And similar situation is actually in the occupied territories of Kherson region. So people for the moment are blocked. They cannot get out. Russian forces do not let anyone out. Again, situation at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant is very risky, of course, and representatives of the International Atomic Energy Agency remain there, and we hear positive news about from Mr. Grossi about possible safe zone in there. We will see how this would realize and would be realized and when, but this is definitely the right way and the right direction to take. What I can just say in general that unfortunately these areas are under constant fightings and under constant shelling from Russian side. Fightings are happening around in the outskirts of the city of Zaporizhzhia of the city of Zaporizhzhia as well.
Speaking of things taking place in the east, what can you share with us about recent frontline updates as the fighting continues?
In general, we hear that Donetsk region and Kharkiv region are the most shelled regions in that area. And even in some settlements, people are recommended to be evacuated, even in the areas of Kharkiv, which have been liberated recently, but still in some areas shellings continue. So some people take a decision to stay, of course, and a lot of people actually take decision to stay, but still Ukrainian government have this option for people to get out of these regions. In general, a situation at the front line remain the same, not much changes, but so for the moment situation remains similar as it is for the past week. Also, we talk about Kherson region. Ukrainian aviation, missile forces and artillery continue active fightings in the Kherson direction. Actually, very active fightings, I can say. Again, we don't hear any confirmation, official confirmation from the Ukrainian military about any advances, but there is information that there are certain areas in Kherson region where Russian forces are actually blocked. So apparently some more details would come sometime soon.
Anna Chernikova reports for us from Kyiv, Ukraine. Anna, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
For additional updates on the war throughout the day, be sure to visit voanews.com/flashpoint. The United Nations Human Rights Office on Tuesday said that Russia's invasion of Ukraine had caused a dire human rights situation and led to a wide range of rights violations, including extrajudicial killings and torture that could also amount to war crimes. The head of the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine, Matilda Bogner, presented the report at a news conference in Kyiv.
The vast majority of civilian casualties that we have documented since the 24th of February were caused by the use of explosive weapons in populated areas, for the most part by Russian armed forces and affiliated armed groups. Shelling from heavy artillery, such as multiple launch rocket systems and missile and air attacks, include weapons that carry cluster munitions, were used repeatedly. While OHCHR has not been able to assess compliance with international humanitarian law for each individual incident, the scale of damage and destruction strongly indicates that violations of international humanitarian law have occurred. The heavy toll that these weapons have had on civilians is evident.
Bogner notes that the armed conflict has led to a wide range of violations of the rights to life, liberty, and security for both civilians and combatants, adding,
"We are gravely concerned by the unlawful killings, including summary executions of civilians by Russian armed forces in more than 30 settlements in Kyiv, Chernihiv, Kharkiv, and Sumy regions. Following several field visits to settlements in Kyiv and Chernihiv regions, we've corroborated willful killings of civilians by Russian armed forces. In some cases, they shot civilians while fleeing in their vehicles, crossing the road on foot, or gathering basic foodstuffs, sometimes by snipers. In other cases, the killings amounted to summary executions."
The Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights said that in their report, it was particularly concerned about the torture and ill treatment of detainees by Russian forces and affiliated armed groups. But the report also said that there had been rights violations by both sides.
We also documented 31 cases of enforced disappearance by Ukrainian law enforcement bodies of people suspected of supporting Russian armed forces and affiliated armed groups. These enforced disappearances have usually lasted for several days, and detentions were later formalized, although in two cases the victims remained disappeared. We also documented cases of torture and ill treatment of prisoners of war by the members of the Ukrainian armed forces during their capture or while in transit camps of internment.
Kyiv and Moscow did not immediately comment on the report carried out between February 1st and July 31st, and based on work of the United Nations Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine. Both sides have denied allegations of human rights abuses. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. A planned speech later this week by Russian President Vladimir Putin may see him declare that four occupied territories of Ukraine are part of Russia. From the Associated Press, Charles de Ledesma reports.
In a daily intelligence briefing, the British Defense Ministry says Putin will address both houses of the Russian parliament on Friday and could declare the annexation of the regions. The internationally criticized vote is ending Tuesday. The ministry adds Russia will almost certainly hope that any accession announcement will be seen as a vindication of the special military operation and will consolidate patriotic support for the conflict, an aspiration, the ministry says, likely undermined by the increasing domestic awareness of Russia's recent battlefield setbacks. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Tuesday that Russia wanted to, quote, save people for Moscow-controlled territories in Ukraine on the last day of annexation votes denounced as a sham by Western leaders. If the regions vote to join Russia, Moscow will claim sovereignty over about 20% of Ukraine, which does include the Crimean Peninsula, which it annexed in 2014. Officials brought ballots door-to-door, and in many cases, they were accompanied by armed Russian forces. Kyiv and its allies say that the West will never recognize the results of the ballot. A close ally of Russia, Kazakhstan, said earlier that it will also not recognize the results of the so-called referendums organized by Moscow on Ukraine's territories occupied by Russian troops. The country's foreign ministry spokesperson said that that decision was based on the, quote, the principle of the country's territorial integrity, end quote. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir also confirms that the United Nations Security Council is convening for a session on Ukraine at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Tuesday following this broadcast. Ukraine requested the session, according to a letter from Ukraine's permanent representative to the United Nations. Among the topics to be discussed are the referendums in the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, as well as the Zaporizhia and Kherson regions. Ukraine also asked that UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres address the session. The Russian news agency Sputnik and the government of Daniel Ortega signed a media cooperation agreement late in August. The strengthening of ties with Russian media occurs during an information blackout in Nicaragua. Christina Casado-Smith narrates this report.
The media sharing agreement between the Russian news agency Sputnik and Nicaragua was announced by the Nicaraguan Communication and Citizenship Council. This group manages the television, radio, and information portal stations in the country. The statement says the collaboration is needed to defend the truth in the face of media manipulation and hate campaigns promoted by the United States and European countries. During the signing ceremony, the director of international cooperation at Sputnik called Western and independent media in the country informative garbage.
They call it garbage and fake news, all information from independent media.
Nicaraguan officials say the other goal is to exchange content and promote mutual understanding between Russia and Nicaragua. But Christopher Mendoza, director of the only organization of independent journalists in Nicaragua, says the real goal is to keep objective journalism out of Nicaragua.
We are becoming more and more like North Korea. That is the commitment of the Ortega Murillo regime, to not tell a single reality, to tell a single truth, making use of the media.
The agreement was announced a month after Nicaragua closed more than 20 local radio and television stations. At the time, the government said the stations did not meet the technical requirements to be on air. Free press organizations say that has left Nicaragua no independent media, only state-run news outlets.
These are not news media. They are propaganda, which violates the constitutional right of every person to receive information.
This is the second media agreement that the Nicaraguan government has signed with a foreign country. In December 2021, it signed a deal with the China Media Group. For Donaldo Hernandez, Cristina Quecedo-Smith, VOA News.
And finally, thousands of Ukrainian schools have been destroyed during the war. The school year started not too long ago, and many Ukrainian school children are facing new and frightening realities. Anna Rice narrates this story to round us out.
Ukraine's Ministry of Education and Science says Russian forces have shelled or bombed some 2,300 educational institutions since the war began. 286 have been destroyed. But that hasn't stopped school from starting this year.
I'm starting my fourth year.
9-year-old Alena Savina is a Kyiv native. She loves music and English lessons and likes to paint. She also knows when it's time to hide in a bomb shelter.
When I hear the siren.
Alena's mother, Yulia Savina, says her daughter really wanted to be in the classroom, so they found a school with a safe shelter.
Our school is small, just two classes. The bomb shelter has recently been renovated. It's large, has very thick walls. It was just repainted for the children. Plumbing fixtures and bathroom accessories have all been redone.
Alena also has a special emergency backpack. Ukrainian police recommend all children carry one.
There's a jacket, water, some snacks. Her grandma gave her extra if she wants to share with friends.
There is also a special badge. I haven't signed it yet. We need to put the parents' names and phone number.
Since July, all educational institutions have undergone safety audits. Only schools with updated bomb shelters can have students in class. And the number of children in school depends on the size of the school's shelter.
We have confirmed that 41% of schools in the country are ready and have proper shelters. Teachers have the means to keep the children who will attend school in person safe.
This school in Irpin, just outside of Kyiv, has 2,000 students, but the bomb shelter can only hold 300.
Тому зараз вирішується питання.
We are currently figuring out how exactly we are going to work. The majority of kids, the oldest, will study online. For now, we are trying in-person and hybrid education for younger children. Maybe we will have two shifts, maybe three.
Kyiv native Oksana Kostyushka says her younger son is going with a hybrid schedule.
My youngest will have a week in person, followed by a week of online education.
It's a tough choice. According to a survey by the educational ombudsman Sergei Gorbachev, over 60% of parents still living in Ukraine have picked online learning for their children. Another 20% are still debating what's best for their kids. For Lesya Bakalets in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Be sure to stay up with the latest developments, not only in Ukraine, but on news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day by pointing your web browser to voanews.com on your phone, your tablet, your desktop computer, or any other electronic device. You can also follow us on social media. Just look for VOA News. On behalf of the entire team here at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.